Welcome to Policy Outsider, presented by the Rockefeller Institute of Government. I'm Alex Morse. On our last episode, we spoke with Kevin Yunus, Chief Operating Officer and Executive Deputy Commissioner of the New York State Empire State Development Corporation, on the makings of Micron's $100 billion investment in upstate New York for a semiconductor chip fabrication facility. If you haven't listened to that one, I encourage you to do so. Kevin covered the negotiations behind the Micron deal and the role of policy in laying the groundwork to secure Micron's investment in New York State. On today's episode, we're taking a deeper dive into the semiconductor industry, an industry that is expected to grow to over $1 trillion within the next 10 years. And we'll be looking at how New York's research and development ecosystem supports the growth of the semiconductor and advanced manufacturing industries. Rockefeller Institute President Bob Megna returns as host to interview Dave Anderson, president of New York Creates, a world-leading research and development, innovation hub, and commercialization facilitator in advanced technologies and manufacturing. Bob and Dave cover the semiconductor industry at large, the science behind the chip-making process, and the importance of academic partnerships with SUNY's colleges and universities to develop the workforce of tomorrow. Coming up next.
Hi, this is Bob Megna, president of Rockefeller Institute of Government, and we're lucky to have with us today Dave Anderson. Dave, what's your title there at New York Creates?
Yeah, I'm president of New York Creates, yes.
Why don't you tell us, we're going to want you to explain to us what New York Creates is, but before that, why don't you talk a little about yourself and your background and how you ended up here with us?
Sure. I've been in the industry my entire career, the semiconductor industry, with the original Fairchild Semiconductor and National Semiconductor. I was part of the startup team of the Semitech Consortium back in the late 80s and spent some time there. And then actually acquired the fab that was the original Semitech fab and formed a couple of companies there, ATDF, which is the Advanced Technology Development Facility, and later Novati Technologies, which was kind of a boutique research and development foundry and low volume manufacturing facilities for very niche devices like medical technologies, defense-related image sensing, and other types of products. Most recently, prior to coming to New York Creates, I was president of SEMI Americas, and SEMI's a worldwide industry association for the semiconductor industry.
And I think maybe if you could talk a little bit about it, because we were actually just talking to some folks from the State Economic Development Authority, and they were talking about the wonderful Micron deal in New York, which I'll ask you about. But can you explain the nature of the semiconductor industry and that this is a global industry? And, you know,
yeah,
can you talk a little about that?
Sure, happy to. The semiconductor industry is truly a global industry. We have research and development, device design, and manufacturing in nearly every major region of the world. And it's, you know, this year, somewhere in the $550 to $600 billion as an industry. Expectation by 2030 or 2032, it'll be a $1 trillion industry. So it really does have a large impact, and it's growing. And semiconductors are literally in everything we use today, from our toasters to our washers to our cars and, of course, our cell phones. And so it's really the fabric of all the products that we use.
And that $1 trillion you're talking about is just the chips. If we talked about like the software throw-offs and all of that, it's even more enormous.
Absolutely. Right? It's just the chips themselves at $1 trillion, yes.
Fascinating. So New York Creates, can you talk a little bit about the organization and what its function is and how you see it kind of progressing in the near future?
Sure. New York Creates is really an acronym. It's the New York Center for Research, Economic Advancement, Technology, Engineering, and Sciences. And all of those words together kind of define what our mission is. I mean, we support economic development, growth of companies in the state of New York, across the state of New York, and of course, the development of new technologies, engineering, and science. So here in Albany, Albany Nanotech Complex is our largest facility that we own and operate, and it has some of the most advanced semiconductor technologies in the world at our site here. But we have several sites across the state that we support technology industries that are nascent and growing, including our assembly and test and packaging facility, which is in Rochester.
How would you describe what goes on at the Albany facility?
Albany facility is a research and development facility for chip technologies. So we have the most recent state-of-the-art equipment that is used for building chips. And we operate at 300 millimeter, which is the diameter of the silicon wafer that chips are made on, which is what is used in leading-edge manufacturing today. And so we do research and development on manufacturing-grade equipment. And the objective there is to ensure that what gets developed in our line can easily transport into a manufacturing operation and be manufacturable.
So basically, it could go from work that gets done at the Albany facility then into manufacturing at a later stage.
Absolutely. We're working on technologies that are potentially 3 to 5 years from production, but working to make sure that they are manufacturable when they go into production.
So what does the future hold? I know the federal government has taken the lead in trying to expand the domestic industry, chip industry, within the United States. And I know that we're hoping that the center New York Creates and the center at Albany and the rest of New York plays a pivotal role in that. Can you talk a little about what the feds are trying to do and, you know, how you guys will be involved?
I mean, it's a very exciting time for the industry. The CHIPS and Science Act is really an incentive-based program to bring manufacturing back to the U.S., and it's really about creating jobs in the U.S. and manufacturing capability in the U.S., but that enables economic and national security as a result of that, so that we're not dependent solely on other countries for our chip supply. But that being said, it is just incentives. It's just that. It helps level the playing field with other regions to enable companies that otherwise might look to other regions to build factories to build them here in the U.S. And I think the outlook of that is very promising with Intel in Ohio, TSMC in Arizona, and of course Micron here in New York. And so as we look to the CHIPS Act and the dollars that are going into manufacturing, it will bring manufacturers like Micron back to the U.S. to build their next generation facilities, and many smaller manufacturers as well. And with that comes the ecosystem that builds around it. So it's not just about those manufacturing plants, but it's the entire ecosystem that it supports and that supports them. And part of that ecosystem is research and development. So the Albany site, focused on research and development, is very well aligned with the strategy in the CHIPS Act for creating a national semiconductor technology center. And there's also an advanced packaging program that we have some core capabilities that fit in that realm as well. So NSTC in and of itself is encompassed to be a network of capabilities across the U.S. So clearly there will be National Semiconductor Technology Center capabilities or centers of excellence around the U.S. But the Albany site that we have here has really unparalleled technology capabilities for semiconductor processing. At 300 millimeter, we have extreme ultraviolet lithography, which is the latest generation of lithography that enables us to scale to the very smallest of dimensions. And we have industry partners that are working on leading edge technologies that really present a portfolio of capabilities in Albany that doesn't exist anywhere else?
You know, for some of our listeners, maybe, I think one of the things I learned when I got a little bit involved with this, when I was helping out a little bit at SUNY Polytechnic, was this concept of a tool that people think of as, like, I think of when I hear tool, a screwdriver or something like that. But can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, you mentioned the ultraviolet lithography, but can you talk a little bit about what it means to say a tool in this industry?
Yeah, when we refer to a tool, we're talking about a very complex piece of equipment that is used for some portion of the manufacturing process. The example I gave of extreme ultraviolet lithography is probably a $350 million screwdriver. It is probably the most complex piece of equipment for manufacturing in the world. And it enables printing line widths and geometries of semiconductor devices at 2 nanometers is the latest that we've been doing. And so it really is a complex piece of machinery. We refer to it as a tool because we use so many different pieces of machinery or pieces of equipment to process a semiconductor device in a fab or a fabrication facility. And so we just simply refer to them as tools.
No, I think it's great, actually, that we refer to them as tools. What do you see as the future now that this NSTC program is in place? Where does Albany fit in, do you think?
Well, we feel like Albany fits very centrally into the NSTC, the National Semiconductor Technology Center. Ideally, we'd love to see the headquarters of that capability in Albany. But as I mentioned, it's to be a national network, and so there will be capabilities spread across the U.S. But the core capabilities we have in Albany are at the very leading edge and will play a significant role in that NSTC, regardless of how it gets structured. So for us, I mean, as we look to the future at New York Creates, it's a very exciting time for us, because we are currently in the scoping phase of our new facility. So we're building a new fab, a new fabrication facility that will expand our clean room footprint that will enable our existing industry partners to expand what they do on site. It will give us capacity to bring in additional NSTC activities. And as we scope additional industry partners, we're looking at the expansion beyond that to bring in additional industry partners that will enable us to continue to grow. So for me personally, it's a great time to build on what we have and lead the next growth phase for the Albany Nanotech Center.
Can you talk a little bit about some of your partners, your industry partners, and the kinds of roles that they play in this process?
Sure. Our largest industry partner is IBM. They've been on site for nearly 20 years, and they do quite a lot of technology development for their industry partners, their own suppliers and technology partners. And so they have been developing technology. The most recent that is announced is a new 2-nanometer nanosheet technology, which is used in very advanced processor design.
Dave, not to interrupt you, can you give folks a sense of what 2 nanometers kind of means?
Well, we're getting close to, when we build a device at 2 nanometers, we are really working at the atomic level, at layers of atoms. And so I wish I did have a way to describe 2 nanometers better than...
I think layers of atoms is good, because we're almost past any kind of real visual context that someone would have.
We really do. When we're processing a device, we're laying down layers of materials that are essentially in the angstrom measurements and atoms at a time. So we're working on the atomic scale in the devices that are being built today. Leading edge microprocessors have on the order of tens of billions of transistors on a single chip that's the size of a fingernail. And so it really is amazing, the processing capability that's enabled at those small geometries.
And at the manufacturing level right now, you know, what is the standard? Is it this 2 nanometer or?
No, currently the state of the art in manufacturing is around 7 nanometers. 2 nanometers is probably 3 to 5 years from production.
And so that's the kind of stuff that gets done at your facility.
That's correct. Some of our other industry partners, Tokyo Electron and Applied Materials, are both a couple of the largest equipment manufacturers. They make the tools that we spoke of for processing, and they've been on site for quite a number of years developing their own next generation pieces of equipment that would go into new devices and next generation manufacturing. And they have the ability on our site to do the pre and post processing that they need in order to develop the unit process for their tools, as well as the access to the very small geometries that we can make with the lithography tools we have.
So I think people sometimes hear these massive numbers for how expensive these tools are, and you talked about that. But it's also expensive then to actually process through those tools, right? So I never really understood the whole silicon business till, and maybe you can describe the process a little bit, where you're putting a wafer through a machine and the cost of just then etching on that machine is incredibly expensive, right?
Yes. So we talk in terms of wafers, and that's really like slices of a single crystal silicon. So it's a silicon wafer, pure silicon, that we build a device on. And chips are made, many hundreds or thousands of chips on a single wafer through laying a series of interconnected layers on that wafer of materials. And so, as I mentioned, in microprocessors, there's tens of billions of transistors on the chip itself. And so when we make those chips, a transistor is like a on and off switch, mm-hmm. like a light switch that enables electrons to flow. And that is, it creates the ones and zeros for processing. And so you put down billions of transistors, and then you have to interconnect them in some way to make them useful. And so we may go through layers. It's literally like a photographic process. Like when we used to use film cameras, we lay down a photosensitive layer and then shine some light through a stencil that we call a photomask that makes a pattern on that wafer that either gets etched away or built on. Then we repeat that process, maybe 100 or 200 layers on a chip. And so it may take up to 4 months actually to process a single wafer through a factory, which is quite expensive.
Yeah, which is why it has to be so clean as well, right?
Yes, our clean rooms are 1,000 times cleaner than an operating room in a hospital. It's a very clean environment because single speck of dust can destroy the entire device.
I know you're an expert on this, so I sorry for the simple questions, but I think it's good for our audience and the general public to know a little bit more about how sophisticated this industry is. And obviously, given that, we need a lot of skill. You need a skilled workforce to do this. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, there's nearly every skill set in the technology space that goes into semiconductor manufacturing, from mechanical engineers to electrical engineers to material scientists, chemists, and so forth, because the processing that we do is in some cases chemistry, in some cases it's using different materials, in other things it's pure physics. And you know, building the equipment requires some very extreme knowledge in mechanical system, fluidic systems, and electrical systems to build that equipment. And so it really does require a full breadth of expertise in order to build a device. But more importantly, it requires that expertise to build a fab. As we build new factories, it's very specialized construction personnel that are involved in that because of the nature of building clean rooms and the air handling systems and the water systems and the gas distribution systems and so forth that we use. So it is a very complex manufacturing facility and an even more complex manufacturing environment.
I think it's always helpful for people to understand the process here because it is so, and it's expensive to run because it requires both the cleanliness, but enormous amounts of power and energy, right? Also.
A large manufacturing fab for semiconductor chip production uses the power of a small city. It really is a large use of power. And we use a lot of water as well. Now, fortunately, we reclaim and purify that water and ultimately goes back in to the system. But it is a very expensive proposition to operate a fab.
So to jump a little bit on you, so large use of power and water might be a reason why Micron selected the spot it selected. Is that fair?
Well, certainly. We have a lot of renewable energy in the state of New York, and clearly we have a lot of water compared to some of the southwestern states, let's say. But it clearly is an important issue in selecting a location. Now, in addition to power and water, which are at the top of the list, the workforce, the available workforce, and basically the entire supply chain for the workforce,
I think that's a good way to describe it.
But the available workforce and to some degree the quality of life is something that they look for because they want to make sure their employees stay there for a long time. And so I think New York rates pretty highly in all of those.
What are the next steps? What's going to happen over the next year or two as part of this process?
Yep. Well, the CHIPS Act is just being rolled out. And so we expect that some of the manufacturing dollars will flow for companies that are going to build new factories early next year, 2023. There's still some definition being built around the NSTC and the advanced packaging programs. We expect to see more clarity on that by first half of next year. And ultimately are preparing to participate in that in somehow. So at our site in Albany, we're planning on building a new fab in preparation for that, as well as in preparation to grow with our industry partners and new partners that are coming in. So it really is an aggressive schedule to be prepared for when the NSTC does roll out. But regardless of when that timing is, we need the additional capability and capacity for our partners.
Given the highly educated nature of the workforce that you talked about, what is it that, what should the relationship be with higher ed and how do we make that more efficient?
Well, it is really interesting because the workforce spans all education levels. The operators of the tools and the technicians that are working on the tools and maintenance and maintaining. They can be 2-year degree, coming out of the community colleges. The engineers that we talked about earlier and the physicists are clearly coming out of university systems at all levels, at bachelor's, master's, and of course, PhDs. Working on the pipeline from universities is very important for our industry. And we're fortunate in Albany that we have SUNY Polytechnic on site. We're across the street from the University of Albany. We have a very close relationship with SUNY and the Research Foundation and all of the SUNY universities across the state, as well as many others in the region, not only just in New York, but across the New England region and literally across the U.S. And, I think that companies are recognizing that if they are to bring manufacturing back to the U.S. as part of the CHIPS Act, they will also need the workforce. And so a key element of the CHIPS Act, including the NSTC, is workforce development and education, and making sure that we put the resources into that to develop the pipeline that enables those students at all levels, from K through 12 through the university system, to engage and understand the industry. And, you know, I think that's one of the challenges we have is, you know, all kids carry around their cell phone and they know what Google and TikTok are, but they don't realize that without semiconductors, there's no TikTok.
So, I know my little guy's hand is going to warp into the shape of an iPhone. What should I have asked you that I haven't asked you? What is on your mind lately with all of this great stuff coming up? What are you most focused on?
We're most focused on expanding our footprint so that we have additional clean room space. But it's not just about the clean room space, it's about the capabilities and the tool set that goes into that space. And so we are, you know, building our new facility to be able to house the next generation of equipment to support the next generation of chip development. And so we are looking at a high NA EUV tool that would fit in our facility. High NA is a high numerical aperture for the tool that enables it to even shrink down to smaller dimensions. And so we're building the facility to be capable for many years beyond where we are today. And it's an exciting time to
Can we get to a single nanometer?
Sure, we'll get down to the, as we said, atomic scale. Yes.
It's fascinating. It really is.
You know, it's interesting. You know, I've been in the industry a long time, and we're always, you know, since I entered it coming out of school, it's been talking about running against the laws of physics. And, you know, it's at some point in time, we're just, you know, laws of physics won't enable us to go any further, but yet we keep going and we keep going.
Is it called Moore's Law? Is that the law?
Yes, it is. Moore's Law is the doubling of transistor density about every 2 years. And we have clearly been able to achieve that for, well, I think he wrote the paper sometime in the 60s. So, you know, for many years, we've been following Moore's Law, which is, you know, it doubles the transistor density that enables much higher processing capability, but it also reduces the cost per square inch of silicon. And that's really what's enabled semiconductors to be prolific in everything because of the cost of the chips has gone down and gone down and gone down because the ability to increase that density of transistors.
You know, it's as an economist, I've always been fascinated that people start talking about chips, and it's kind of funny, like a commodity almost now, even though we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars to build the tools and hundreds of thousands of dollars to run a wafer through. But I guess because scale has become so, you know, big, but also so small at the same time, you can just churn these things out once you figure it out.
Yes, right? And it's interesting as we go through cycles. In fact, the industry right now, as we speak, is going through somewhat of a down cycle. After a couple of years of record growth, it's contracting a bit, but it's only contracting on an average selling price perspective. The unit volumes are still going up. So, as you said, as an economist, you can see that we continue to build more and more chips for everything, because as we create new sensors, it collects more data. As we collect new data, it has to be stored. It has to be processed. So the data centers are getting bigger. We have processing on the edge, which is a whole different type of processing technology. And so all of this just continues to evolve and expand the production of chips.
So that's interesting, because I have a new car, and I realized that everything in it now is chip-enabled, including the dashboard, which is kind of fascinating to me. But speaking of that, you know, we've talked about the Albany facility. We also, I think you also have a facility out in Utica as part of SUNY Polytechnic. And aren't they producing chips on like or one of the companies working on chips that have silicon carbide as opposed to just silicon? And maybe you can talk about that a little bit.
Sure. It's mainly used for power applications. And Wolfspeed is the company that's building on silicon carbide. In fact, they built the first 200 millimeter silicon carbide fab in Utica. And they build power management chips and devices for a large portion of the electric vehicle market. And so they're there. And then Danfoss is a company that's also in Utica that does packaging for power electronics. And so we have kind of a cluster of power electronics there in the Utica area that is, evolving technologies that, reduce the size, reduce the weight, and increase the charge capabilities and so forth that enable advancements in electric vehicles.
Fantastic. Anything else, Dave, you'd like to talk about?
Yeah, I'm talking anything you want to talk about.
No, I think this is great. And how many people at the Albany facility now, between the companies and the folks that New York Creates employs?
Sure. On site, right now, pre-COVID, we were running close to 3,000 people on site. Most recent numbers are somewhere in the 1,600 per day on site. And that includes, about 800 or so that are New York Creates personnel. We have IBM employees, a couple hundred of them, a couple hundred Tokyo Electron employees, another 100 or so of Applied Materials, and several other supplier companies that have fewer numbers, but a substantial number of people there, as well as industry partners. And then, of course, SUNY Polytechnic personnel, both staff and students. And so we have on the order of 1,600 today. And, over the next few months, as more and more people come back on site, we expect we'll be back in the 2,000 to 3,000 range within the next year.
Did COVID have an impact on, like everywhere else, or were people able to kind of manage remotely, or was it a tough period?
It was a tough period, I think, for all companies. But, the semiconductor industry was deemed a critical industry. And so as a manufacturing facility, we were enabled to continue operations. And I say manufacturing loosely because we are a research and development facility, but the fact that we have manufacturing equipment that if it's shut down is extremely difficult to bring back online. And so we continued operations through COVID. Now, interestingly enough, many of our suppliers could do remote diagnostics and remote repair through AV and VR and that sort of thing. And so we really had the ability to have people work both on site inside the factory as well as remotely. So we still have quite a number of our administrative staff and even some engineering staff that are still working remotely most of the time, although they're in for a few days every now and then. But it's been a real change in the way that, like everyone, it's been a change in the way we work.
It's interesting and ironic, right? It's the computer chip that enables those people to work from home too.
Absolutely. It's the chip that enabled the VR technologies to be able to, have somebody, for example, working on our lithography tool here in the fab in Albany that is actually sitting in Belgium, who's the expert, being able to tell people locally what to look for.
Dave, thank you for coming in and talking about this. I think it's great for people to hear about this. Again, more people work there than I think people imagine, but it's, and these are actually, maybe I'll ask you about this too. These are also well-paying jobs, right? These are the kinds of jobs we want in New York State, right?
They are the kinds of jobs we want. The average salary in the semiconductor industry is higher, substantially higher than the national average. And so they are high paying jobs at the technician level, at the engineering level, and at the management level. They're They are. And so they are the types of jobs that we want to have here in the state.
It's fantastic. Anyway, again, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
And I think we can end it there.
After the conversation, I had to look something up. Dave mentioned the smallest scale of technology is down to 2 nanometers, which he described as near the atomic level. For some additional references from the National Nanotechnology Initiative, a single sheet of paper is roughly 100,000 nanometers thick. There are over 25 million nanometers in 1 inch. On a comparative scale, if the diameter of a marble was 1 nanometer, then the diameter of the Earth would be roughly 1 meter. I could keep going, but my producers are telling me to stop. All's to say, the scale at which the semiconductor industry is working is nearly impossible to see and incredibly difficult to fathom, which just goes to show how impressive this all is. Thanks again to Bob Megna, president of the Rockefeller Institute, and Dave Anderson, president of New York Creates, for taking the time to talk shop about nanotechnology and the semiconductor industry and what we can expect to see in this industry moving forward. Did you like this episode? Please rate, subscribe, and share. It will help others find the podcast and help us deliver the latest in public policy research. All of our episodes are available for free wherever you stream your podcasts, and transcripts are available on our website. Special thanks to Rockefeller Institute staff Joel Torrado, Heather Trella, and Laura Schultz for their contributions to this episode. Thanks for listening. I'm Alex Morse. Until next time. Policy Outsider is presented by the Rockefeller Institute of Government, the public policy research arm of the State University of New York. The Institute conducts cutting-edge, nonpartisan public policy research and analysis to inform lasting solutions to the challenges facing New York State and the nation. Learn more at rockinst.org or by following at RockefellerInst, that's Rockefeller I-N-S-T, on social media. Have a question, comment, or idea? Email us at communications@rock.suny.edu.